WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Mike White, wrote the new film, The Good Girl. He also wrote and starred in the film Chuck and Buck, wrote the screenplay for the recent comedy Orange County, and wrote for the TV series Dawson's Creek and Freaks and Geeks. In his new movie, The Good Girl, Jennifer Aniston plays Justine, a 30-something woman in a small Texas town who feels trapped by her life but sees no way out. She hates her job at the local discount store, Retail Rodeo, and her husband seems to always be stoned on marijuana when she gets home from work. But a new employee at the Retail Rodeo catches her attention. He's young and brooding. He calls himself Holden, after the main character in the novel The Catcher in the Rye. Holden, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, is barely out of his teens, still lives at home with his parents, and feels trapped by his life, too. He takes refuge in writing stories about his unhappy life. In this scene, Justine gives him a ride home after work. He invites her in, they walk past his parents, who are watching TV in the living room, and have this conversation in his bedroom.
This is my room.
Not a lot to look at. What are your folks like?
They're okay. They don't get me. I mean, they're all right. I just...
My husband doesn't get me.
Since when do you have a husband?
Since 7 years. He's a painter.
What's he paint?
Houses. He's a pig. He talks, but he doesn't think. I'm sick of it. I was looking at you in the store, and I liked how you kept to yourself. I saw in your eyes that you hate the world. I hate it, too. You know what I'm talking about?
Mike White, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks.
Now, the Jennifer Aniston character says to her younger boyfriend, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, "I saw in your eyes that you hate the world. I hate it, too." But that shared hatred really isn't enough to form a lasting bond. Did you ever think that it was, that a shared kind of alienation was was a really strong bond?
Well, it's interesting that you talk about that, because it really was the idea that sort of inspired the movie, which is, you know, sometimes we see in other people our own, you know, it's like out of, yeah, a shared hatred, you can't create a love, you know. And I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, when you are in pain or, you know, depressed, you know, you look to someone else who feels the way you're feeling, and yet sometimes that just adds to the misery.
The Jennifer Aniston character, who thinks of herself as really trapped by her life, calls her husband a pig and a pothead. But in his own way, he's a very sympathetic character with a big heart. He's played by John C. Reilly, who also starred in Boogie Nights, Heart Eight, Magnolia, and The Perfect Storm. Can you tell us why you wanted to cast him? I think he's terrific.
Well, that character's really important. I mean, all of the characters. I mean, the idea for me, one of the big themes of the movie is about change and the ability, you know, do we have the ability to change ourselves? And I wanted all of the characters to sort of, just like, you know, she's giving makeovers to the women in the story, you kind of want to just feel like through the narrative, all of the characters go through some kind of makeover, whether it's through their, you know, they change, or the perception of them changes through the course of the movie. And his character was key because of the way things transpire, and you want to feel like at the beginning he's this one type of character, and that he's, you know, he has nothing to offer her, and you understand why she feels so, you know, desperate in this relationship. But it was important that over the course of the movie you realize that he, you know, he is got a big heart, and that there is something more to him than what you see at the beginning, and that in the end it almost feels like that's the love story.
Now, in The Good Girl, you play a security guard at the Retail Rodeo, the discount store. Let me play a clip from the movie. In this scene, you invite the Jennifer Aniston character to a Bible study meeting.
Hey, Justine, can I talk to you for a second?
Yeah.
I was just curious, have you ever been to a Bible study?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we got a good one going on every Wednesday at the First Church of Nazarene. Rodney comes, Benita comes. You got any interest in reading the Bible?
I have my own, you know, beliefs.
Well, we don't preach fire and brimstone. 10 Commandments, gotta live by those. Other than the usual ways, we're not interested in scaring people. We're about loving Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like my nights to myself.
Well, maybe you'll have night after night of eternal hellfire all to yourself. Just kidding you. Drive safe.
That was Mike White and Jennifer Aniston in a scene from The Good Girl. Mike White not only co-stars in the movie, he wrote it. Mike, you must know a lot about Bible study. Your father, Mel White, is a minister who ghostwrote biographies for Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and I think Billy Graham. But then your father came out, and his co-authors didn't exactly approve of his being gay.
No.
How old were you when that happened?
I was around 11 years old when I found out what was going on with my family, and then it just kind of, the whole process of his coming out was like very extended. So it went on for, you know, throughout my high school years.
What did it look like from your point of view as not even a young man yet? I mean, you're a preteener, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
To have your father surprise the family and the world with his sexual orientation. I don't know, it's a very young age to be thinking a lot about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was definitely a life-altering experience. And the fact that he was gay was less of a difficult thing to digest than just, you know, the fact of my parents' marriage unraveling and our family transforming. It was, for, you know, many years when I was growing up, I felt like we had the picture-perfect family, and you know, to have that sort of illusion pulled out from under you, you know, changes the way you see things.
Your father stayed religious. He's the minister now in a gay church. But were you expected to change your religious perspective when he came out? I figure you grew up a lot in the church, and
mm-hmm.
and I presume it was a fundamentalist church.
Right. I think my father was very sensitive to the fact that when he grew up, there was really a lot of proselytizing within the household, and this sense of, you know, are you okay with the Lord every day, you know, with his own parents. And he was really sensitive to not kind of foist his beliefs upon me, you know, and was sensitive from an early age. So it was, I do have a sort of complicated, I don't know, relationship to organized religion, but I never, you know, I was never sort of a devout believer, you know, from the time I was a little kid. I just had a sort of skeptical perspective on it all. So,
were there things that you were expected to do or expected to avoid as a Christian kid?
Yeah, I mean, there was the sense of, you know, you don't curse, you don't, you know. I was kind of a precocious kid, and I was a real movie fan even early on, and always, you know, was demanding that my parents would take me across town to see these sort of, you know, to these art house movies, you know. And for some reason, I, you know, at the time, I really, you know, I would pitch a fit if they wouldn't take me. And a lot of times the content of the movies were completely inappropriate for someone my age, but I was willful, and my parents kind of didn't know what to do. So there was those kinds of issues all the time. And yet my parents, you know, in that world were actually pretty liberal comparatively.
What was one of the movies that you insisted on seeing that if they could have, they would have prevented you from seeing?
Well, they ended up taking me, but I remember I wanted to see that. I must have been 8 years old, and I wanted to see Woody Allen's Interiors.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to see it again and again. I don't know. I just felt like at the time I was like, oh, this is what profundity looks like.
It's a lot of Sturm und Drang for a young kid.
Yeah. But so I was always in search of, I mean, I had my second grade teacher was Sam Shepard's mother.
No kidding.
Yeah, she was a teacher at my elementary school, and she was a great teacher and was my favorite. And so I think it was around when I was seven that I realized that you know, playwriting or whatever could be a career choice. And I was reading Buried Child in second grade and thinking,
this is what I want to do. Right?
Yeah, exactly. This is what I want to do. So I was kind of a weird kid, as you can imagine.
Were you writing pretentious theater as a kid?
Yes. I was, the more pretentious, the better. I mean, I feel like, you know, sometimes I look at what I've done now and I think, gosh, all my like heady, highbrow stuff I wrote 10, 15 years ago. But I don't know. Now I'm sort of more, I don't know, like wary to go down the road of pretense.
Now, some of the people who you knew as a child, who your father worked with before he came out, were people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. And these are people who see Hollywood as kind of like the gates to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of that ever rub off on you? And I guess, you know, there you are in the center of it now.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was a kid growing up, my grandparents, my father's parents, were very, very devout and conservative Christians. And I remember, I was such a movie enthusiast. I remember, you know, I used to watch The China Syndrome, this movie with Jane Fonda, and mm-hmm. I was really into it. And when my grandparents came to town, I was like, oh, you have to see this movie. It's, you know, about, you know, nuclear, you know, energy and all of the, you know, dangers of it. And I put it on, and my grandmother sat down and she just she put a little mark on a piece of paper for every time someone cussed. And her response to the movie was, well, there were 40, you know, GDs and, you know, 30 four-letter words and how could you be watching this? And at the time, I in my head, I was like, well, this sort of seals the deal. It's like, you know, if I have to choose between sort of my father's, like, religious heritage or, you know, the world of movies, I definitely know where I come down. And kind of, you know, early on was saying, if there's two churches and one is the church of the movie theater or the church of organized religion, I guess I belong to the church of movies.
Do you still go to church?
I do. For me, every time I go to church, it's like an insanely emotional experience. I just start crying the minute I go in and cry until I leave. I find the ritual so moving and it just brings back a lot of childhood memories. And it's such a powerful experience. And I do think what I aspire to do in terms of my writing and in terms of the movie going experience is trying to create something that is, you know, that verges on the feelings that a good church going experience provides, you know, something that's cathartic and has a spiritual component and is powerful in terms of the way you think about your life and what you've done and the choices you've made and an introspective experience. And so, you know, there's a little bit of sermonizing in the stuff that I do, although I'm also loath to do it in an overt way.
My guest is Mike White. He wrote the new film, The Good Girl. We'll talk more after our break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Mike White. He's a screenwriter and actor. He wrote and starred in the independent film Chuck and Buck. He wrote and has a small part in the new film, The Good Girl, which stars Jennifer Aniston. And he also co-wrote the movie Orange County. Let's talk about your first film, Chuck and Buck. I'm going to ask you to describe the two main characters in the story.
Well, there's the character I played was Buck, who is sort of the image of stunted maturity, who's, you know, he seems like a sort of 12-year-old in a man's body who loses his mother at the beginning of the movie and tracks down his old childhood friend, Chuck, who was played by Chris Weitz, and who's now a sort of Hollywood mover and shaker and has really forgotten about his old friend until he shows up in his life.
And when Buck shows up at Chuck's door, he nearly becomes Chuck's stalker. And Chuck really wants nothing to do with Buck anymore. And Buck can't really comprehend that Chuck has really grown up and that Chuck has an important job, that Chuck signs rock bands and produces things. Your character is actually kind of creepy because he's never emotionally developed past childhood. Also, he's gay, but he has a child's understanding of how to deal with sexuality, which is you play sex games, secret sex games, with your friend. And he's become almost like a stalker to his old childhood friend, Chuck. How does this character look from your point of view, his creator and the actor who played him?
Well, I think everything you said is apt. I think that, for me, I like the character in the sense that he, in a very twisted way, represents something kind of pure and something that's uncompromised. and yet at the same time, he is stunted. And so, I was trying to, in creating the character, say something about childhood and sexuality and how, in a way, it's much more complex and vibrant than it is as an adult, where in a way this some of the compromises or the simplifications of it are in some ways seemingly untrue or inauthentic. And certainly in the case of the other character, Chuck, you wonder what really, how much of his sexuality or his entire personality is inauthentic.
In your movie, Chuck and Buck, Buck is such a loser. I mean, he really is not cognizant of what's happening in the world around him. He's emotionally stunted in his childhood. He has no friends. And yet, you have a happy ending. In the movie, things kind of work out in part through his discovery of writing plays and the context that he makes through that. It seems improbable that such a story would have a happy ending.
Well, I don't know. I feel like that character needs a happy ending. Otherwise, the movie, I think, is just, too unrelentingly bleak. I mean, I feel like he... the hope is that, if you look at the movie from a sort of a Jungian psychological place, it's, they are two sides of the same person. And in a way, what you're seeking is a kind of an ending where both can coexist and neither has to die in some way. And I feel like that was what I was aiming for.
Why did you want to play the character of Buck?
Well, I actually didn't write it to play it. It was Miguel Arteta's idea, the director, and for me, it just seemed like an exciting opportunity to get out of the cave that was my writing life. It seemed like an opportunity too challenging and terrifying to not pursue. So I did it, for better or worse.
What was it like in that first movie to see yourself blown up on screen?
It was horrifying. The first time I saw it with an audience was at Sundance, and my father was there. And I just remember there's one scene where Buck is telling a little kid, the kid says he can't have lollipops because it'll rot your teeth. And I'm saying, and my character says, I eat them all the time, and look at my teeth. And I open my mouth, and they're completely corroded and cruddy. Yeah. And my father looked at me, and he was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you showing this strange, in a way, people could say it was an alter ego or something. Why are you showing this, face to the world? And, it was such a strange, psychodrama going on inside my head to see that all come to life.
Are those gray, corroding teeth really yours?
No.
Oh, okay. So you were just acting. I mean,
I was just acting. No.
It's not like you were letting us in on a cosmetic secret.
No, but I think that, it's a more just a metaphor for, a lot of times you, especially when you go public, you want to show your best face, put your best face forward. And the creation of Buck was definitely trying to show a character that you wouldn't want to be, somebody that, is in some ways who has nothing to offer and is, extremely dysfunctional and is the person you don't want to be. And so it's even interesting now as, years have gone by since, I played the part, how, people confuse me with the character and how I'm living with that to this day.
What's next for you?
I've written a script that starts shooting in November called The School of Rock. It's for Scott Rudin and Paramount, and Jack Black is going to star in it.
What's it about?
It's about Jack Black plays a musician who can't find anyone to be in his band because he has such a bad reputation, so he ends up pretending to be a substitute teacher for a fourth grade class filled with musical prodigies and uses them to be his backup band.
Wow.
It's going to be a sort of a complicated endeavor, but it's definitely a lark.
Okay. Well, good luck with your movies.
Thanks so much.
And thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Mike White wrote the screenplay for the new film The Good Girl and plays the part of the security guard Corny. He wrote and starred in the film Chuck and Buck. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.